So welcome all to the end of August Q&A. I'm going to mute all, and as per usual, everybody does have the ability to unmute themselves. Please feel free to do so if you have a question or comment. Please remute yourself afterwards so we keep any background noise to a minimum. Welcome anybody who is new to the Ottawa PC User Group. We welcome guests at any time. If you want to join, if you check the chat, there's a link in there on how you can join the group. And with that, I will turn it over to Alan to lead us through tonight's deck. Alan, take it away.
Okay, thanks, Chris. We have a few different topics tonight, but I think we're going to have time at the end for some questions. So if people have questions or if you have items that you'd like to share, we'll see what we can do later on. But by all means, put any questions in the chat, and Chris and I will be monitoring that when we're not actually talking. Speaking of which, the first item is a small share that I have, and I just want to let everyone know or remind people, if you saw the message last week, that we've changed the archives for the Q&A session just a little bit. Now, previously, we had done as two separate pages, one for the topics of the sessions and a second one for the various recordings. But they were basically running on and on, and were likely to make a huge list in the end. So basically, I've split them up so that they're now, first of all, I've combined the two lists. So the topics and the recordings are now side by side on the webpage. And the lists are split up and broken out by calendar year. So if you go to the Q&A webpage and you scroll down, you will get to this area right here, which is our archive section. And you'll see now that there's just a single link which takes you to the session archives. So if you click on that link, then you will go to the archives page. And as you can see, we have a page for 2022, so those are the current listings, and then the previous years follow on behind that. And if you click on a link for any given year, let's say 2022 here, then you go to that page, and as you can see now, I have the topics on the left, and the associated recordings are on the right. So you can basically search for these topics, and then you can call up the PowerPoint or the audio recording using the links here. So I hope that's going to be easier to deal with in the future. Certainly be a shorter page anyway. Still be a long page, because if we're doing weekly Q&As, there's going to be a lot of Q&As in any given year. But at least they'll be separated a little bit. Okay, so I'll leave that for you to check out. And in the meantime, let's carry on. And I advertised this week that we were getting two rants for the price of one. And here's Chris with his first rant.
So this is all about the News and Interest app that's built into Windows, and it comes up on the Windows taskbar. And I've talked before a little bit about the News and Interest and some things that bothered me, and I have a newsletter article about one particular aspect of it. But basically, it's a little app. It's built in. By default, will show you typically the temperature and a little bit about the weather, whether it's cloudy or sunny and so forth, down in the system tray down near the clock. Next. And I think it always used to show the temperature, but then now it seems that not so much. Sometimes it'll show the temperature, which is what I'm most interested in. Sometimes it'll just show whether it's raining or things like that, or just humid. This is irrespective of the fact that you look in particular about the one that says humid. There's lots of room that they could have actually just put in the temperature there as well. Why they decide that they only show the temperature sometimes, I have no clue. Next. And then this is just a recap of a previous thing that I found annoying about news and interest was that if you just happen to hover the mouse over top or pass over the icon for news and interest, you got a big thing that obliterated about a quarter of the screen. And so if you wanted to turn that off, you can right-click on the taskbar, choose news and interest, and uncheck open on hover. And that way you will only get the full news and interest if you actually click the icon. So I find that made it a little bit more bearable. Next. Now we come to what got me really riled up about this and what made me want to do a rant about it is that all of a sudden recently, rather than just showing the weather, occasionally I got financial market info showing up on the taskbar info of the icon where I wanted to see what's the current temperature out there. And it seemed like it was about half the time I was getting these things like, you know, F News bearish and TD earnings and things like that. Didn't interest me at all. And I didn't ask for it. And so I decided, well, let's see if I can actually turn it off. Next. So the first thing I did was I right-clicked on News and Interests. And then next. I clicked on the settings in the big window for news and interests, and that opened up that box there. And then I clicked on manage interests, figuring that, well, I didn't see anything on there about what is actually going to show up. Maybe if I go to manage interests, I can actually say I'm not interested in financial information. Next. So that brings you to a web page using, of course, Microsoft Bing, because, Microsoft doesn't want to respect browser that you choose to use. So it goes to the this Microsoft Start web page. And one of the tabs, and it opened on that tab, was My Interests. Next. And then on the left-hand panel, there's Discover Interests. And then next, one of the options on there was Money. And if you see on the right-hand side about Money, there's a whole bunch of things that are about market information and things like that. So next. So what I did was I blocked the one for markets by clicking on that circle, and it changed to a red circle with a line through it. And then I went through all of the other finance ones and turned them off. They were all off by default, the other ones, but I turned them off as well. And then I looked in the other things, lifestyle and autos, local, shopping, video, anything that was turned on, I turned off. So I just blocked a whole bunch of them. Next. And then I went to experience settings because advertising in Microsoft's parlance is experiences. And so I went to the experiences tab and next. And then I looked and there was information cards, weather. I thought, okay, well, that I do want. So I made sure it was turned on. Next. So I enabled weather. It was already enabled, but I just made sure it was enabled. And then I disabled finance, which was turned on. And then I disabled a whole bunch of others as well. So next. So then, even though I blocked 68 separate interests and 9 experiences, clicking on the news and interest actually brought up that whole big box that covers about a quarter of the screen, still had all kinds of financial information and shopping information and traffic cans, all kinds of stuff that I had said I was not particularly interested in. Because, of course, Microsoft and Windows is so consistent in the way that it presents information to us all. Next. And I still had stock market info occasionally displaying in the taskbar icon in addition to weather information. So at that point, I was sort of unsuccessful at that. So I went back to the start page, and there was another option on there for notifications, and all of them were enabled. And so I disabled all, including both that were under the finance category. There was no option there for weather for notification, so that's fine. I disabled all except for account alerts, and that's one that you will get pop-ups if they're Microsoft has deemed that there's a problem with your Microsoft account and things like that. So I disabled everything there that I could except for accounts alerts. And then I thought about that for a second. I thought, well, account alerts, and followers. You know, you can see followers on the screen there. They're not part of news and interests. So I don't think that this notifications part has absolutely anything to do with news and interests app on Windows. Next. So then all of a sudden, it turns out maybe it was actually fixed, because after a bit, I was only seeing weather information on the taskbar. I have no idea what I did that actually made that change. I made a lot of changes, and I actually restarted between a number of the changes that I made just to see if maybe a reboot was required to have these things take effect. I went to the feedback hub, and I gave feedback to there on how I thought it was not working very well and what I expected out of the news and interest. Now, even though it is now showing just the weather icon in the tray, it still only shows the temperature periodically. Sometimes it just shows cloudy or whatever, humid or whatever. And really what it comes down to is the current temperature is really what I want the most. So next. Oh, yeah. it went from bad to worse. So the next day when I started up my computer, news and interest was showing nothing. So no weather, no finance, nothing. It was just totally blank. And you can see the icon is still there. If I hover the mouse over it, tells me that it's news and interest, but it's just not showing anything. So next. All I had to do was sign out and sign back in. And since then, it has actually been showing the weather information. Again, temperature only sometimes, but usually it shows that. I'm looking at my taskbar icon right now, and it shows a cloud, and it says rain off and on. It's not showing the temperature, which, again, is what I really wanted more than anything else. So next. So I decided I'm going looking for a replacement for news and interest. This had annoyed me enough. And preferably I wanted a free program. I'm not paying an awful lot of money just to see what the current temperature is. What I really wanted was it to display the current temperature so that at a glance I can see what the current temperature is. I don't really care an awful lot about hourly forecasts, when sunrise is, whether it's cloudy out and things like that. I can get that from the full Windows Weather app, which I actually really think is a good app. And if I want more weather-related information, that's a click away for me. And so that's not really a big deal. So if anybody is actually interested in what that journey looked like looking for a replacement for news and interest for weather information in the system tray, I'll throw a note into the chat window. If we get enough, I'll actually put together a reverse rant, hopefully, something that I think is a really quite good app. So let me know if you're interested, and I might have a follow-up for that.
A couple of things. Tom's put a link in the chat. Is ottawa.weatherstats.ca. I don't know whether that's a weather station, but it sounds like it is. And Natalie says, the weather network works for me.
Yeah. Do either of those give you a system tray icon where you can see the temperature at a glance all the time? Because that's what I'm interested in getting. So if either of those do it, and if people want to see this further look into finding an app that will do this for me, I would be willing to look at those as well. Let me know if either of those will actually give me the current temperature on the system tray, always visible.
Well, it's not going to give the same thing, I guess.
Sorry, Tom?
I think that might have been Tim.
Oh, sorry, Tim?
Weather stats only gives a tab, but it is updated every 5 minutes.
It gives a tab where? In your browser?
Yes.
Okay, that I'm not interested in. I want if I'm going to have something that is a full windowed app of any description at all, I'm quite happy with the weather app that's built into Windows. It's great, gives all the information, but it doesn't give me that temperature at a glance on the taskbar.
Stuart says, go stick your head out the window.
Yeah. That still doesn't tell me what the temperature is. I don't know what the temperature is.
Maybe what you need, Chris, is a widget.
Well, essentially, that's what News and Interest is. And essentially, that's what the replacement that I did find, that's what it is as well. It's like a widget.
Yeah. Micheline says she relies on a remote temperature and humidity sensor in the garden. That's another option. I saw one of these explaining computers thing where he set up a Raspberry Pi with a temperature, an outside temperature sensor, and fed it to a display. So you only need a couple hundred bucks and you'll be in business.
Yeah, a little bit more than I want to do.
Well, maybe somebody will tell you about a neat widget that works. Okay, let's move along then. I have a follow-up on an item which we had a couple of weeks ago, where I was asking about ebook reader replacements. I had been using Libby on a PC, because OverDrive was discontinued, and now they've taken away Libby, and I was just wondering what software. So Natalie had suggested a couple of options here, a phone number for the library, and also an online support system. So since it's a computer club, I sent them an email, and I thought I explained what I wanted fairly succinctly. And I actually have an Asus T100. And if you don't know what that is, it's a hybrid computer. It's a kind of a tablet screen that detaches from a keyboard. So you can use it as kind of a mini laptop. It's a 10 or 11 inch laptop. Or if you detach the screen unit, then you essentially have a Windows-based tablet. Now, it's actually dual-booted, so it will run on Windows or Linux. But I have been using Windows because I've been using OverDrive to access ebooks from the library. But I keep getting these messages saying that something is going to be shut down, and I'm wondering whether they're no longer providing the PC app, the Windows app for the desktop, which is essentially what I'm using, but whether they will still allow the old versions to access their web server, I guess time will tell. But I was wondering whether there's something else that would work. So I sent in my thing here saying, what other options are there for an e-reader on a Windows-based PC? And I got a reply a couple of days later, and he or she says, OverDrive has not discontinued Libby. It's discontinued the OverDrive app, replacing it with Libby. And I should be able to use Libby to download ebooks from the library. Well, I mean, that's kind of true, except if they'd read my email and they'd gone to the Libby website, they would find that Libby is actually still available, yes, but it's only available for Apple products and for Android. And since I told them specifically I'm using a Windows PC, clearly neither of those apps is going to cut it, at least not easily. But then if you dig into the Libby help, they have a solution here right at the bottom of the page. It says, if you have a Windows computer or a Chromebook, for example, you can use the Libby app, or you can use Libby in your web browser at libbyapp.com. So what they're basically telling me is that they have a web page that I can go to. And sure enough, if I go to that web page, and they're in my browser now, on the PC, it wants my library card. So if I follow the bouncing ball here and go through all these different screens, enter my library card, select a book, eventually I'll get to the situation where I have my book on the screen, and I can now scroll up and down and left to right and page it and all the rest of it. So I can read my book as the person said, on my PC using the Libby quote app. However, anybody see a problem here? What happens when I turn my internet off? For example, when I used to travel, you know, when people could actually take flights and go places, I would actually take this little PC, this little laptop with me, because it was useful for surfing the web and getting emails and backing up my pictures from my digital camera. But it was also useful as an e-reader. But the problem is, if you're on the plane and you don't have an internet connection, typically not without paying an arm and a leg, and if you don't have an internet connection, then libbyapp.com is basically useless. So that's kind of as far as I've got, at least for this week. And I'll leave it till next week, and I'll come back and I'll tell you about a slightly different solution that I'm playing with. But in the meantime, that's my little rant about OPL and their support services, I guess, and OverDrive and their support for Windows PCs. In the meantime, we're going back to Chris, who's got a second rant for us tonight.
Wait.
Oh, wait a minute. We've got a comment.
Yes. If you download an ebook and you have Adobe Digital Connections downloaded, then it will open the ebook and save it, and you can read it offline.
It's actually called Adobe Digital Editions, and that's a spoiler alert for next week, Tom. Oh, you're right.
Sorry.
It actually works, but it's not as good as the OverDrive app, and I'll explain why next week. Okay, Chris.
Okay. This is about error messages. And so one day I was trying to get a particular store app to work, and it wasn't working properly, and I decided to uninstall it and tried to update it. So I did the uninstall portion of it, and then when I went to reinstall it, I got this error message saying, select retry to close and update the app. And the app can't update when it's open. Well, first off, it had been uninstalled. I didn't see any processes in memory. And I actually tried rebooting. And even though it said it had uninstalled it, obviously something was screwed up, because I still get this error message, select retry to close and update the app. Well, the thing that I saw there a little bit glaring was there is no option to retry. You have an option to close or report this problem. So next. So I guess what I was really supposed to do is click on report this problem and tell them that their error messages suck, and they should either put a retry button on there or tell me to do something else. And it reminds me of an error message. This goes back many, many years. American Megatrends, in their BIOS message, if you had no keyboard plugged in, you get an error message saying, no keyboard detected, press F1 to resume. So that's an oldie but a goodie, and other error messages that somebody didn't think things through exactly correctly when they put together the error message. So just a quick rant on my part.
I can't believe Microsoft would do stuff like that. And so going back to ebooks, there's a couple of things Tom's mentioned here. He notes that Sumatra and Calibre, which are applications, will both read ebooks. And that's true, except Sumatra, I believe, is just a PDF viewer. Calibre is certainly an ebook manager. Now, the problem with Calibre is that the library, the books that you get from the library, ebooks you get from the library, are subject to digital rights management. So Calibre, out of the box, won't deal with Ottawa Library books, ebooks. And there is a plugin which is called DDRM, which in theory will eliminate the DRM and let you read your ebooks. I'm not quite sure how legal that is. It probably isn't. And the second thing Tom mentioned was that he's still using OverDrive on Windows 10. And that's the old version of the OverDrive app before they released Libby. And sure enough, I have the same thing. If you have the program from a few years back, it still does run and it reads library books and no problem. The question is whether, as I said earlier, whether they're going to continue allowing Overdrive to access their web server and sort out this DRM business and let you read ebooks from the library. Time will tell, I guess, whether it still keeps working. Anyway, in the meantime, let's move along. Now we have a share from Linda all about images and cell phones.
Okay, thanks, Alan. So this is my kind of continuing saga about getting to know my new cell phone and what it can do in terms of the photography editing features. So one of the things that I discovered is it allows you to remove unwanted people from the background of your photo, which is kind of a cool feature. And probably it seems to me, although probably the latest Pixel models, the latest Samsungs for sure have this feature, and probably a late model iPhone would have it as well. But what I like about it is that it means you don't have to ask permission of people that might be in the back of your images. So say you're at, you have a party and you've got someone, double fisting their drinks in the background or something, and they don't want their prospective employer to see that. You don't have to worry about posting that with that person in there. You don't have to worry about going and getting permission to post. You don't have to worry about them suing you or whatever. So that's kind of why I like the feature. So next, please. So this is last week in Victoria when I was out there visiting my sister, and she took me out for dim sum, and it's a nice enough picture, and I don't mind the people in the background, but when I went to edit the photo, I think I was just going to crop it. I got this this message came up, remove people from background, and I thought, oh, well, let's give it a try. So next. So I did. And it's fine. I mean, it's not a great job. It's not something I would permit to be shown on my Shutterfly site or something like that. You certainly wouldn't print it. You can sort of see to the right of her head, it doesn't really look like a table or a wall. And if you look at the first image, there's a gentleman sitting next to that wall with the lamp, and you can see he has cast a shadow, and that shadow is still on the pillar there. So not a perfect job, but, when I look at a picture like that, I'm looking at, well, I'm torn between my sister and the food, so it's probably a draw and a wash in terms of that, but that's where our eye goes. So it really good for just a quick share if you're showing someone just on your cell phone, or you put it on Facebook and people look at it for, 2 nanoseconds and move on. Anyway, next. But what I realized was it's not consistent. So here's a picture that I took of my brother-in-law, and I was sitting across from him for the meal, and there's clearly a gentleman in the background. The face is not covered in any way. It's very clearly a human face. So I thought, great, I'll go into that. I'll go in to edit it, and that little message will pop up. Do I want to remove people from background? But no. So next. So it didn't pop up, and I thought, oh, okay, well, I remember showing you guys that there's this magic eraser, and I can just put my finger on the guy and drag it around, and I can erase them. Like, I think I had a napkin on the couch was the one I showed you guys. So I thought, okay, I'll do that. So I go into magic eraser feature. Next. And then it pops up, oh, suggestions found. And you can see it's made this little outline of the human. And it did a nice, neat job compared to me dragging my finger over there, especially in the little narrow section. So I was happy with that. So next. So there's my final image. So again, you look at to the right of his arm, it kind of looks a little weird. I'd want to clean that up if I was going to post that anywhere where the image would be large. But it's not the worst job in the world, because you look at that quickly, your eye's going to go to my brother, it's going to go to the bowl, it's going to go to the beer, well, probably the beer before the bowl, and then the boat. So, our eye is just not concentrating on the background. So in conclusion, next, I think, as I said, it's great for a quick share, just sitting beside someone, flipping through photos in your phone. But definitely not high enough quality for printing. I would not even want someone to view it on a large screen necessarily, but it keeps the lawyers away if you do have someone that didn't want to be in your image. That's it. Thank you.
That's really neat.
Okay. All right. So a question came in just before we started the session. And this is from Marjorie. And she says that she's getting a message on her Samsung Galaxy phone. And it's basically saying that there's a software update available. The latest software update is ready to be installed. And it says it's a security patch for September. So it's, it's for September 2020. I didn't notice that. I assumed it was September 2022. Oh, now I would be concerned that that might not be exactly legitimate. Anyway, the question was, how do I know if it's legitimate or not? I've only recently started getting these messages again because my older phone ran out of these updates. And usually the problem is not that you get the message. The problem is you don't get the message because you're not getting any more security patches for Android. But on relatively new phones, you generally get 2 or 3 years support for updates to Android and security patches for Android. And usually a message like this will just pop up. It's coming from the operating system somewhere. It's not an email and it's not a text message, SMS message. And so it's kind of built into the phone somehow. And I think I've always tended to trust them when they arrive like that. However, I think there's a way to check. And this website from Samsung basically suggests going to settings and to either software update or system update, and then look at download and install, and there should be a check for system updates or a check for software updates. And sure enough, if I look on my newer phone, which does get updates, and in fact got this message just yesterday or the day before, yesterday by the look of it. So if I go to settings and software update, you can see download and install. It tells me that it was last checked on August 30th, like yesterday, and it downloaded the update automatically. And that's because I've got this auto download over Wi-Fi toggled to be on. So anytime there's an over-the-air update available, and my phone's connected to Wi-Fi, typically I turn the data off because I'm on a pay-as-you-go system for data. So I typically only do these kind of system updates when I'm connected to Wi-Fi. But then because I'm set for auto-download, as soon as there's a system update available, it will pop up a message and say, do you want to do this? And it'll either let me do it right now or it will schedule it for some time in overnight or whatever. And generally they're pretty quick, so I just let them run if I don't happen to be using my phone for something. And then the final thing here, it says the last update was installed on August the 30th, so that's when it did it. So I think that's a reasonable way to check. Natalie says that's what, can you do that? Yes, it looks like you can do that, Natalie. So if anybody has any other bright ideas, I tried looking on Samsung's, on the web for Samsung's G7 update schedules and didn't find anything particularly useful on a Samsung website that I would love and trust. But again, if anybody has any bright ideas, then we're always happy to hear from you. Speaking of which, that's it for the prepared information. So I don't know whether anybody, were there any other questions in the chat?
Yeah, I have one that I put into the chat right at the start tonight. I thought this was a little bit of a long shot, so I didn't actually make a slide on it or anything like that. But we did have a member who sent in a question about, or a suggestion, or an ask, if anybody could demo sometime in the future to show how to edit photos in an Apple phone. So I'm not, I thought it was a little bit of a long shot, but if there is anybody on in Q&A who has an idea that they could actually do a demo on editing photos on an Apple phone, I'll send it into suggestion box at opcug.ca, and we can reserve a spot for you on a future Q&A. We had a question from Carol. Can you recommend someone who I could hire to come to my home and help me with security issues on my computer? So if there's anybody who is interested in helping out that or knows somebody else who can be hired to do that, Carol Kerfoot in the chat, you could reply directly to her, I guess. And I think that's the end of the questions. The ones that I saw anyways. Let me see. Yeah, I don't see any other questions there. So if anybody else does have any other questions, you can put it in the chat or unmute yourself.
While people are thinking about questions, let's just talk about the next monthly meeting, which will be on September the 14th. We're going to start the fall session of our regular meetings. And September the 14th is going to be members' favorites. So we're looking for people who want to make presentations. And anything that's computer related is acceptable. And just about any time of presentation is also acceptable. 10 to 15 minutes is kind of recommended. But, you know, less or more is always welcome. And this next slide is one that Chris made up, just giving some of the past issues that people have covered. If you're interested to do something, then here are some suggestions. And you can see there that we've had a lot of different things from word processing systems, file managers, hardware, solid-state drives, CAD programs, how to avoid scams, and voice over the internet. I mean, is there anything that's computer-related is always of interest to us.
Yeah, I always say to people, if there's anything that when you're using your computer, you think, hey, this is pretty cool. You know, this really helps me. And it can be a part of a program, you know, it's a particular aspect of a program or a utility, anything that you've found, can be commercial, free, whatever, a service that you've come across that, you think is a pretty neat service that you think maybe there's some other members who could take advantage of this who maybe don't know about this. Pretty, you know, it doesn't have to be long and involved. Like Alan says, it can be less than 10 minutes if you want. But if you can just share your knowledge with other people in the group, always helpful. Just in the meantime, we did have a couple of, or one question anyways came in. E.O. Driscoll asked, does anyone know of software that shows how trees will look around a house? Tom said he thought SketchUp allowed that, and E.O. Driscoll responded with, what I mean is it would help to know how big, tall, wide a tree will be in 30 years as one plans landscaping around a house. So actually seeing a given tree against a photo of your house, I guess with either virtual reality or something like that, and I presume so you could see, well, this is what this tree is going to look like in 10 years. This is what it's going to look like in 30 years, so forth. So if anybody has any idea on something there, we'd be interested in knowing. Natalie has just saw a new DuckDuckGo email protection beta and wondering if anybody has tried it, knows anything about it. Yeah, DuckDuckGo is, they certainly claim to be very concerned about people's privacy.
I have a question. I can't seem to figure out how to Oh, I did a screen cap, but I can't seem to figure out how to get it in, so I'll just see if I can show this. No, it's not going to work, is it? I got a text from Rogers saying they're very sorry for the outage on July the 8th, which is actually when it was. And but it's a strange phone number, and it says, reply Y to apply. Well, surely you don't have to reply to get your Rogers.
You do not have to reply.
That is such a mean scam. That is going to catch so many people.
And Rogers has stated that there are scams out there now and that you need to do nothing to get whatever rebate is going to be coming. So definitely don't respond to that.
I was pretty sure there's a bunch of others that have come lately, people saying, I've just deposited, I got one today saying there was an e-transfer, and I should click here to get my e-transfer. They're coming thick and fast. I'm having trouble making, being totally available for these meetings because of things that happen at home and always on Wednesdays, but tonight I seem to have a little bit of a window. And you may have done an article on this already, but is there any information on how to handle cookies? So almost everybody now says we use cookies and they won't let you do anything unless you click on this thing that says, yes, I accept. And I've tried clicking on the one where you manage the cookies, and usually you can say I only want essential ones. But are there any guidelines for how to know when just to leave the site and forget it, or should you always forget it when they ask you for cookies? Or, like, are there any, and I'm sure you guys have done a session on this before, so you could maybe just point me in that direction. But I find it very frustrating to know when it's safe and when it's not safe. And so usually I just click away from the site and don't bother, but sometimes you actually would like to, you know, get the information. And even some sites that I use, that I have to use sort of, are doing it. And so you wonder. So, general question on cookies.
I do it the other way. I usually accept all the cookies, but then sometimes I'll go and delete the history and get rid of all the cookies. So and then the problem is it saves some of my logins. So then I have to enter the login information again.
Yeah.
I've talked before about my opinion on cookies, and I'm open to anybody who says, no, Chris, you're crazy. But I don't think cookies are inherently evil. Cookies are, they can be used for tracking advertising and things like that. But, you know, they're not going to harm your computer or anything like that. The problem with the web is that it is a stateless environment. When you make a connection and you request something, and then basically you disconnect from that website, well, how do they know it's the same person when you then request a new page, or, you know, you want to do something else on the site? The way they know it's the same person is through cookies, typically. And so, you know, that they're required on an awful lot of sites for proper operation of the website, quite frankly. Now, again, if anybody wants to argue with me, please chime in. But I let cookies happen on my computer, and I don't go and clean them up after the fact. I just don't worry about cookies.
Yeah, Tom says that he uses a program, Cookie Auto Delete, to get rid of the cookies.
Chris worries about cookies when my cookie jar gets low.
I want more cookies, more cookies.
Yes, that's kind of, it's kind of odd because I'm actually a cookie monster. I could easily finish a package of Oreos on my own. Anyway, okay, so, well, that's good. It's good to hear. I did try deleting my cookies, and I had the same problem as Alan. I deleted some things that I didn't really mean to delete, and I couldn't figure out how to tell which ones were which, and yeah.
CCleaner is one app that I use on my computer on a regular basis, and I find it has some very handy capabilities, And what I can do is let me share. Find where I am, share, CCleaner. So here's the interface for CCleaner. I just use the free version. You'll get nagged periodically about, well, don't you want to upgrade to the paid version? Or, you know, your other option is, no, I'll miss out. And so I always tell them that I'll miss out. So I am pretty judicious about what I choose to delete. You can see here on for Windows itself, it has tabs for Microsoft Edge, as well as Chromium and Internet Explorer. So Edge is, that's the old one that's no longer available, and then Chromium. So I do the cache, so all the cached web pages, I get rid of them whenever I run this. I don't delete the cookies, but I could set it up there to delete cookies. But as others have noted, in some cases, that's going to force you to re-log in to a particular website. So that's one of the reasons why I don't. The other is I don't believe they're inherently evil. Also on the Applications tab, you can see the other browsers I have, so Firefox, Thunderbird, and Opera. And again, what I will do is I'll delete the cache. I'll also compact the database, but I don't get rid of things like cookies. So I go in and, you know, I specifically choose those sort of things. If you really do want to delete cookies, you can go in here and you can set it up so it'll delete cookies from every one of the browsers that's installed on your computer. And you just run the analyze. It'll tell you what it's going to delete. And I could do this, but it's not going to, I don't want it to close my browser and things like that. So I'm going to say no to closing the browsers. Microsoft Photos. Interesting. So then it'll come up and it'll say, you know, the internet cache for Edge Chromium. You know, it's going to delete 964 files, 139 megabytes, so forth. Temporary files for the system, so half a gig of that, and so forth. If I look at that and I say, okay, yes, I'm interested in that, I run CCleaner, and it'll actually go through and do that operation on my computer. So for doing cleanups of things, I think CCleaner is a really great program. Just be a little bit careful about what you choose that you actually want to clean up on there. You can do things like save passwords. You know, you can also do things like, what are some of the other things in here? Windows log files. Well, typically the Windows log files aren't big anyway, so I don't care. DNS cache. Do I really care about deleting DNS cache? It's not using up any appreciable space on my computer. Menu order cache, you know, some of the things I just, you know, it's not going to have an appreciable effect on free disk space on my computer, which is the main reason why I use CCleaner. So I deselect an awful lot of things, but memory dumps can get rid of an awful lot. Check disk fragments sometimes. The browser caches typically are the really big ones that you'll find. And so I use CCleaner to do the cleanup of all the browsers all at once. And I run that either when it pops up or about once a week or so, I'll go in and I'll run it.
And the browser caches are the things that they share when you've been in there, so you don't actually really need them?
It's the pages that you've actually downloaded to your computer when you visit a website. So it'll be the pages, the text information, the graphics, everything that you see on screen, that's the internet cache. And the idea behind the internet cache, it came about more in back in the days of dial-up and things like that, where if you visited a page and it hadn't changed at all, well, if you've already downloaded that information, why re-download it? But in the day of high-speed internet, if you have really large caches, it might be even faster to download the page again rather than to fish it out of your cache locally.
Okay, cool. So you can always get back to it if you have the address.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Thank you very much. That puts my mind at ease.
But again, I'm really happy to listen to anybody who says, no, you should get rid of cookies.
And just going back to that Roger's question for a minute, we were having some discussion about that before the session actually started, and I'd mentioned that I actually had a $4 and change rebate from Rogers on my FIDO account. Now, it came as a discount on the bill. So there was no email saying, you know, click here for anything. It basically, it's like a refund that's going to be on your account. Mm-hmm. I imagine that's how they're going to treat all such paybacks.
And I got it on my Rogers bill already, automatically.
Yeah. Right.
Anytime somebody says you have a parcel at FedEx or an e-transfer at
Home Limited,
click here, you know it's a scam.
I've been getting lots of earbuds this week. Your earbud package is about to be delivered.
Tom, I'm interested. You say third-party cookies are evil. I'm curious as to what it is that makes a third-party cookie evil.
Mainly, they're tracing to see what you are looking at, what sites you're going to, what things you're interested in buying, what reviews you're looking at. And I don't think they should be doing that, but they do.
Hmm. Even so, like, I mean, I think it's largely for advertising purposes, right? Or marketing purposes of some description. I don't know.
I expect so. I mean, it mainly adjusts what as you get and so on. There may be other effects as well, but it's mainly advertising, I agree.
Yeah. And advertising, I don't particularly care about, quite frankly. I mean, if you're going to get ads anyways, and you can use an ad blocker if you want or not, but you're going to get ads sent to you. Presumably, if people are doing targeted advertising, they're going to be more likely to send me ads of stuff that I'm actually interested in. So is that evil to send me, you know, an advertisement for a camera as opposed to vacation property in Australia? You know, I mean, I'd rather look at an ad for a camera, rather than something that is not relevant to me at all.
I don't see many ads as was shown in a previous edition of this. So the ads actually don't bother me. I just don't want people kind of profiling me more than I do myself.
Yeah. But it also, the third-party cookie has to be put there somehow with the involvement of the website you're visiting. Is that correct?
Yes.
So I guess I'm thinking that I inherently have a certain amount of trust to a website that I visit. And so if they are they're allowing third party cookies to be displayed to me, I don't know. It's just, I tend to think that maybe there's other things that I can get worked up about than that.
They're getting paid for it.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
So
they say if you're involved in something and you can't tell what the product is, you're the product. And so yeah, there's a certain truth to that, I guess. So yeah, they're getting paid to send you. I mean, certainly the breathless, you know, look what this actress looks like 30 years later and things like that, the clickbait ones, you know, they're just chock-a-block with advertisement that, you know, if they get you to click on that website, they get paid an awful lot of money, relatively speaking. So, I don't know. Up until now, I've yet to see something that really gets me worked up about cookies to the point where I want to do something about it.
Interesting thing I've found recently is I've been using Vivaldi as my browser, and I think it has an ad blocker built in by default and enabled by default. So I go to some websites and it complains that my ad blocker is running and please let me turn it off. Well, I didn't even know I had an ad blocker turned on.
Yeah, I've seen that more and more where some websites want you to turn off the ad blocker. And to a certain extent, I agree with that, because you know the reason why they're giving you content for free is that it's not really for free. They're going to give you ads, and that's how they get paid, to give you content. And you know, I can sympathize with that viewpoint.
My answer is just click delete and don't go to that site. Get the information from somewhere else.
Yeah, and that's valid too. You know, it's a transaction. You're deciding whether you feel it is appropriate or it's enough value to you to get the information they're providing. Is it valuable enough that you'll allow ads to be on your screen, which they then get paid for? And that's value proposition that you decide.
Yeah, Bob Walker here. Part of it too is how much do you care about your personal privacy? You know, do you want third parties that don't have your best interest at stake to know about your political views, whether you're part of LGBTQ whatever community, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's really none of their business. And if you care about your personal privacy, you want to be careful about these things.
Yeah, but I tend not to get overly worked up about it, because I figure if you are really concerned, then turn off your computer, you know, or at the very minimum, stop using the web. Because they are constantly finding new ways of tracking you and finding out information about you and things like that. So, I sympathize with that aspect, that maybe they shouldn't be, doing this sort of stuff. But the reality is they are. And the reality is, if I want to use the web, in all likelihood, they are going to find out a lot about me that I would probably prefer they not have. But if I use the web, that's the reality. That's going to happen.
Another thing that particularly annoys me is when I'm on another website and I get an ad from Amazon about something that I've already bought from Amazon, and they're still bugging me to buy it.
Yeah, I know. I always wonder about that. I wonder why in that. And it usually is right after I buy it. All of a sudden, I'm getting ads for the exact same item or very similar items. I think their algorithms, they're broken in that regard.
Are they offering it to you any cheaper?
No. As a matter of fact, I just bought a leveling adapter for my tripod, and I got it when it was about 10% off, and today it got delivered. I also got an email from Amazon offering me the exact same item at the full price rather than the discounted price. I don't know why they do that. It's just bizarre. Very, very strange.
Maybe they think you'll buy one for somebody else.
Maybe, yeah. I guess if I think it's really good and I haven't sent it back because I didn't like it, maybe I'll buy it for a gift. I don't know. Very, very odd though. I still think it's odd.
I guess one of the possible explanation that if you buy something that, let's say, a cartridge, there's a good chance you're going to buy another cartridge later. So I guess.
Yeah, I can see consumables. I can see for sure. But when it's an item, you know, like the leveling adapter I bought, until I get a new tripod, and even if I get a new tripod, I'll use this leveling adapter on a new tripod. So, if I buy another tripod, you know, I would know to go looking for that particular item. They don't have to send me an email the same day I got it delivered, saying, hey, here, you can buy another one at more expensive than you paid.
But I get a feeling you're not a typical user. Most users will get, oh, I bought socks, or I bought pens, or whatever. So I think the majority of the buyer will be typical like that.
But Amazon has prided itself so much on their marketing ability, and over the years they've been remarkably successful. But I just don't see the point of this. And I think a lot of people buy things, that it's not the consumables like a printer toner cartridge or something like that. It's durable goods that are going to last a long time. And even if it's a, even if it's consumable, you know, if I'm buying toner cartridges and I'm happy with them, you know, the next time I need one, I'm just going to go back to my previous orders and I'll click the buy again button. You know, I don't know.
Maybe they're trying to get you to buy a second level so that your tripod can be even more level.
Maybe. God only knows.
With that, it's time to draw this thing to a close. So our final item here is a reminder about next week. September the 7th will be our next question and answer session. And you notice we're a bit light on prepared content this week. So if you have any questions or if you have anything you want to share, please let us know and we'll be sure to insert it into next week's deck. So other than that, I hope you've enjoyed the fine discussion tonight and the various topics we've covered. And we'll see you next week.
Thanks, folks. We'll see you next week.
Thank you.